I'm Marty Moscow, and welcome to Radio Times.
It's official. Online betting is finally legal in your state.
You want to make every game interesting? Step one, open the BetMGM Sportsbook.
DraftKings used their top-of-the-line technology to create a mobile casino app for a new way to get skin in the game.
FanDuel has made it incredibly easy to bet the big game.
When you're ready to cash out, you can get to the cage without ever leaving your couch and get your winnings in as little as 24 hours.
Chances are you have seen these ads on TV promoting sports betting from companies like FanDuel, DraftKings, Barstool, BetMGM, and others. There has been a receptive audience for online wagering, with so many people stuck at home looking for some excitement to break the monotony of the pandemic-induced quarantining. State governments, strapped for cash because of the pandemic economy, have been looking to internet-based games of chance to help balance the books. A Supreme Court decision a few years ago helped pave the way when it legalized sports betting, and now more states are getting in on the action. Today in Radio Times, we dig into the explosion in online gambling. Has convenience increased the risk of addiction? Are states addicted to gambling revenue? And what are the true costs? Joining us is Leah Naur. She's joining us by Skype, and she's professor and director of the Center for Gambling Studies and the Addiction Counselor Training Certificate Program at Rutgers University School of Social Work. Leah Naur, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Josh Aircole, and he is executive director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling of Pennsylvania. And Josh Aircole, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty. It's nice to be here.
Nice to have you both with us. And Neil, let me begin with you with some sort of broad-based questions, and then we'll get do a deep dive into what's happening with, especially with sports betting. But how has the internet changed gambling itself? Leah?
It has made, the major change is it has made opportunities accessible to everyone. So if you don't live near a casino or a racetrack, you just were less likely to go, or it would be a monthly excursion. Now anyone can bet 24/7 from their cell phone and hide it from everyone in the house. So I could be watching cartoons with my kid and madly gambling away my life savings on my cell phone.
And how often do you think that is happening?
I mean, I think it's happening more than people realize, maybe not in the extreme sense, but there's a lot of people who are gambling way more than they had expected.
Because of the convenience, the accessibility, that it's literally just a thumb push away.
Yes, in part, yes. And it's very immersive. So the online experience is extremely immersive, and you can just sort of tunnel in, and it takes up a lot of your time. So if you're lonely or you can't sleep at night or whatever, it's a really good medium for that.
Josh, a related question. How much do you think the pandemic has supercharged online gambling?
Yeah, it's been quite compelling. Obviously, you know, this all happened. The term perfect storm has been used a lot over the course of the past year or so, specifically in Pennsylvania, and obviously with the ruling that you mentioned as far as the legalization of sports betting. This all kind of happened at the same time. You know, within a couple of year period, we saw a tremendous expansion here in Pennsylvania. We saw the rollout of different types of gambling, both sports in a casino as well as online, and then online casino gambling. And then within a year after that becoming available, we had the shutdown. So there was this tremendous shift. There was obviously the stress and the isolation and the boredom that so many of us faced over the course of the past year. It all kind of pointed in that direction. So, you know, like Leah just mentioned, that increased availability obviously led to increased participation. I don't think that anybody anticipated that the participation was going to be at the level it was. And a large part of that obviously is due to the pandemic.
And do we know how many people are gambling online, Josh?
There are a lot of revenue reports that are released in Pennsylvania by the Pennsylvania Gaming Control Board. And as far as the numbers of folks, it really generates, it reflects more the revenue that's being generated. And what we've seen over the course of the past 12 months, obviously, was a pretty dramatic shift downward in terms of slot machine and table game revenue on site at brick and mortar establishments, but the numbers of dollars being spent online on online sports betting, on online casino based gambling, that absolutely skyrocketed.
Leah, let me go back to you and something I was reading about. Now that New Jersey's casinos are opening up, seeing people flocking to them. I'm not sure how much distancing is going on in a casino, let's say in Atlantic City, but seeing those revenues going up, is there kind of a pent-up desire for people to go gambling at a casino?
I think there's a pent-up desire for people to go anywhere and just, you know, return to some sense of normalcy. So you're seeing that with regard to travel and with regard to sort of destinations. So yes, I think people who like to gamble, they've sort of been doing it online, and now they want to go and try their hand, you know, in a social setting.
Help us understand sports betting. And Leah, I'll toss this first to you in terms of we played some of those ads and I've seen them, and they do make you feel kind of jazzy while you're watching them. But help us understand how sports betting works. Leah?
Well, there's so many different ways that you can bet on sports. And, you know, what we found is that even with little kids, they've done studies where little kids hear those ads and they can repeat back verbatim sports wagering lingo. They can, some of them remember the companies. So those ads are extremely powerful and they're playing all the time. And they feature people like, you know, Jesse from Breaking Bad. I mean, people that everyone kind of likes. And anybody who plays sports as an athlete or coaches, you know, on weekends, or, you know, people who just watch sports, we all think we're kind of experts, right? And so there's a type of bet that you could place on anything. And the greatest danger is the live in-game betting, because a huge amount of people who lose too much money is attributed to the impulsivity. And when you're betting quickly in the game and you have that adrenaline rush, you're not even going to be paying attention to how much you're betting.
And Josh, let me pick up on that. In terms of sports betting, what can you bet on? Can you bet on everything, anything?
In some states, that is the case. Pennsylvania, they have a little bit more of a strict policy as far as what's available. So in Pennsylvania, unlike some other states, basically it's limited to collegiate and professional sporting events or athletic events. But what's changed so dramatically, you know, in addition to obviously a tremendous amount of advertising and a tremendous amount of focus, is over the course of the past 20 or 30 years. You know, when I was a kid going to Phillies games and Eagles games, I remember men lined up at the payphones, ready to make their wagers for the afternoon game or the evening game or whatever the case was. You know, that was a single bet that was being placed on one activity, and that's where it kind of started, and that's where it stopped. And you know, they obviously had the ability to bet on many different types of games, but today, the betting is so continuous throughout each event. So, you know, there's live betting that, you know, if a original point spread that is established for the launch of a game, that can change throughout the course of a game. Different types of plays can be wagered upon. Different types of activities within the game can be wagered upon. So unlike those older type bets where you would maybe place one wager on a single sporting event and then await the outcome, now it's a much more consistent participation and there's a lot more immediate gratification or obviously disappointment in some cases.
Sure. But you're betting on, it seems like, almost any, like in football, any throw or any particular kind of tackle, as specific as that?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's you know, potentially hundreds of different wagers that can be placed within a single sporting event. And, you know, it really ranges from all kinds of different types of bets that might be interesting to different folks who are participating.
And Nia, can we assume that these are targeting young men? I mean, that's such a stereotype about sports, but who are these companies appealing to?
I mean, definitely a younger male demographic historically is true. Now, we in New Jersey, unlike in other states, the legislature has mandated that this data be analyzed every year. And our Center for Gambling Studies, we do all the data analysis of all this data. So we do the play-by-play for both casino and sports, and we're starting on the analysis for the first 2 years of sports. So we'll be able to know that better. In New Jersey, you can also wager on esports, and that's really the new way for younger people, because kids love video games, and they really get into the esports.
And esport, just for the uninitiated, and I would half include myself, what do you mean by esports?
These are like competitions using video games. And so they're typically, you know, video games for different sports, and it's organized multiplayer competitions. And some of these young people, you know, they lead these teams, and they're considered athletes, and they sit at a computer and they play as if they're, you know, the teams or the players.
Help us understand, if I can toss this back to you, Leah, I was reading about loot boxes. What are loot boxes?
So loot boxes are prizes within games, and I'll sort of give you the range of them, where you pay extra money with the possibility of winning. They also call them loot crates. You might, and they vary by the game. So the loot boxes in one game, so let's take games pitched towards 7 and 8 year olds. Roblox, for example, is a very well-known child's, you know, online gaming platform, and you can buy as a parent Robux. And so if the kid wants to buy a kitty cat to follow them around, or they want they want to jump twice as high in a game, they want some advantage, they can pay Robux. So this is sort of priming children as young as 6, 7 years old towards these loot boxes. And then as we get older, we get in the bigger and better games, we're buying weapons that can be sort of traded on the market, or we're buying advantages in different games. And now there's even lawsuits that have to do with, okay, I paid all this money to have this advantage, but now you're using machine learning and AI to then fine-tune my experience and make it harder for me, so I'm losing my advantage. So these loot boxes go all the way up, and you can spend enormous amounts of money on them.
Wow. And just, I wanted to pick up on something you said. So we're talking about children 5, 6, 7, 8 years old that might be playing these games?
Well, they're all playing these games. I mean, my own kid plays them. I play them. But the question is, do you buy the Robux? Do you let your kid, you know, buy the extra, what we consider loot boxes, on these games? As you get older, yes, the loot box may appear as a present, it may appear as a figure, and you don't know what's going to be inside it.
Well, we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation, pick up on what we've been talking about with our guests. That's Leah Naur, director of the Center for Gambling Studies at Rutgers University School of Social Work. Also with us, Josh Aircole. He is executive director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling of Pennsylvania. We'll be talking with Dave Yeager, a U.S. Army veteran, about his struggles with gambling addiction. And we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back after this very short break.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow. And let me just recap what we're talking about. Online gambling and sports betting have boomed during the pandemic. Gambling is now legal in most states, and sports betting is growing in popularity after the U.S. Supreme Court made it legal just a couple of years ago. But with that convenience comes an increased risk of addiction. We're talking with Leah Naur, director of gambling studies at Rutgers University, and Josh Aircole, executive director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling of Pennsylvania. And joining us now is Dave Yeager. He's a U.S. Army veteran recovering from gambling addiction. He's also the host of the Problem Gambling podcast for military service members called Fall In. And Dave Yeager, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Nice to be on. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Let me just make sure our listeners can join us, and there are several ways you can do it. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499, especially if you are struggling with some kind of gambling addiction or you know someone who is. This is the place to call. Dave, let me just ask you a couple of questions and find out about how you're doing now, but also how your gambling problems began. You were stationed in Korea. What happened? What got you hooked on gambling?
Yeah, I was. It was 2001, November specifically, when I went to Korea. It was right after 9/11. Kind of tense times to be in the military. And, you know, at the time I had two very young children. I was getting ready to be stationed in Korea for a year, be away from my family. You know, I was struggling in my marriage because of the fact that I was going away. And I went to Korea, kind of very already stressed. Hit the ground in Korea, totally different time zone, under a lot of restrictions because of what had just happened. You know, and with, of course, at the time, President Bush calling North Korea kind of part of that axis of evil. It was already very tense in that country. Got there, got settled in. They put me up in a hotel on the base in Seoul, on the Army base in Seoul. And I found myself in that hotel in a casino-style slot room, which had never really been an issue for me when I was younger. I had, you know, being from Pennsylvania, I'd been to Atlantic City. I had enjoyed it, hadn't had a big deal with it. But I found myself in that room. I took out some money. I went, I sat behind one of the machines, and lo and behold, I made what they say is the biggest mistake a problem gambler can make, is I won.
Right.
And while it was not an overwhelming win, it was enough that in that moment I could feel the stress, the fear, all the things that I was going through kind of wash away in that moment.
And it really was, and Dave, I'm sorry to jump in there, and I do want to get our other two guests in on the conversation, but Dave, it was sort of that thrill of victory. You felt it at that moment?
It was more than the thrill of victory. It was the thrill of victory coupled with the release of stress. Everything in that moment was good. Everything in that moment felt good. And I only know that because I struggled to try to recreate that moment over and over and over again. And I think that's what kind of, you know, pulled me into my addiction. So, yeah, it definitely was the thrill of victory and the escape from my reality at that particular moment.
Dave, hold on to that thought. And let me get Leah first to respond and help us understand what is perhaps even unique about an addiction to gambling, different from other kinds of addictions? Is there something that sets it apart?
Yeah, so I have a couple things. Our research believes that there's different ways in which people develop gambling problems. There are people who just develop problems because of the accessibility, the acceptability, and then the operant conditioning that's inherent in a gambling environment. Like, you know, there's going to be a win, and the longer you go, you think it's more likely. So that is very addictive just in and of itself. And then there's these superstitions and illogical perceptions. But then there's another group of folks that, in addition to that, also have, and this is where a lot of military members may come, you know, it may be relevant, is they have, you know, some depression, some anxiety, they may have experienced trauma, there could be childhood issues, loss, isolation. And those things then, combined with the things I first mentioned, make the person really want to escape and you know, address their mood issues. And then the third group are people who are just inherently more impulsive, more sensation seeking. And so there's this huge combination. And military members in particular have higher rates of problem gambling. I don't know if you want me to, we just published a study literally not 6 months ago on this in New Jersey. I don't know if you want me to go into any of it.
Well, you know what, hold on to that thought, because I know Dave wants to talk a bit more and talk about the military experience for him, but let me just give Josh a chance to weigh in as well, and then Dave will get back to you. Josh, your thoughts about what we've heard so far from Dave Yeager?
Yeah, you know, and I'm so glad Dave could join us today to share a bit about his background and his story, because I think that's what's really most impactful. And what we hear most often, you know, when I talk to somebody, if I'm at a exhibit program, or if I'm at a health fair or community program or whatever, the topic of gambling, when it comes up, or the topic of problem gambling more specifically, it always revolves around money. You know, that's the discussion is, I work too hard for my money. I wouldn't want to lose my money. I don't understand why people just don't stop. And, you know, what Dave just tapped into here is, you know, this is much more than just a money-related problem. And like he said, I mean, even the win wasn't anything, you know, super substantial, but it was enough to get him involved in a process. And what Dave mentioned there was so much more at play, the escape from stress, the escape from feelings and isolation. You know, and there's a lot of situations where we might have somebody who sits down and, like Nia mentioned, you know, maybe the gambling is something that leads to other problems, or maybe there's something going on that this ultimately will lead them to this type of activity. And when they do finally sit down at a table, at a machine, or whatever the case may be, and they experience that feeling, that's where the true reward is, or the true win is. So even if there's a financial loss in some cases, that may still equate to that individual as a win, so to speak.
Dave, let me go back to you. One of the things that you were telling Debbie Builder, our producer, was that part of being in the military, and it makes sense, is this ability to compartmentalize. But also talking about yourself, and sound like you had a difficult childhood, the ability to compartmentalize your emotions, your feelings. How do you think this fed your addiction?
I think it played a huge part in my addiction, because I've spent most of my life, including my childhood and into my adult life, compartmentalizing my feelings and kind of tucking them away, because, you know, dealing with them in the moment, to me, at least the way that I learned it, was wrong. I mean, you didn't deal with your emotions in the moment. It wasn't something you did. So instead of dealing with it, I found another way out. I found another outlet, which was, in my case, gambling and the addiction to gambling. It was a way to skirt or get away from what I didn't want to deal with, which was the emotions that, you know, at some point, when you deal with enough different things over enough years, at some point, it has to be dealt with. It's going to come out one way or another. At least that's the way I feel about it. And, you know, the gambling put it off until it couldn't anymore. So I think it played a huge role in my addiction and in me getting into my addiction.
I wonder, too, about just when you're in the throes of that kind of addiction, you know, what kind of person did you become?
The kind of person that lost contact with my young children for 2 years after my ex and I separated. The kind of person that borrowed money from my subordinates in the military. The kind of person that would lie and manipulate and would change the situation to suit my needs so I could stay in my addiction. And the thing is, that's not who I am as a person. That's what I did to feed my addiction. In hindsight, I look back on it and I wonder how I could ever have possibly stepped down those roads. And yet, to deny it would be wrong, because I did. I did exactly those things.
And I appreciate your honesty about that, because I think it's important for people to understand how someone can get so caught up in something that they almost don't recognize themselves, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say the addiction for me was all-consuming. It was, you know, until I reached the point where I knew I had to get help, it was my all-consuming desire was to feed that addiction. It just came to a point where I didn't care where I went. I didn't care about the money. I didn't care about the wins anymore. All I wanted to do was stay in my addiction. So, yeah, it can become all-consuming.
Leah, hearing Dave Yeager describe his addiction to gambling, how common do you think that is? I mean, there's so many different kinds of ways that people gamble, either, you know, in Atlantic City or online. What are the gradations?
It is very common. And gambling, unlike other addictions, you can hide. Literally, it has a higher suicide rate than any addiction, for example.
Wow.
And particularly high among the military, who gamble. because you can hide it until you have done so much devastation, not just to yourself, but to your family, that, you know, not only your life is ruined, but other people's lives are ruined. And I think a lot of people are in that circumstance. And the more that you really need the gambling to feel sane, to cope with stress, to find meaning in your life, and the more isolated you get from other people in your family because you're lying to them and you're pushing them away, the more dangerous it becomes.
Well, and picking up on that, Josh, I can imagine someone, you know, just the kind of shame that they must feel about their behavior and trying to hide that behavior from the people in their lives.
Absolutely. That's one of the primary things that we hear about. We get calls to the office and obviously to the helpline at the 1-800-GAMBLER number every day. And folks are talking about that specific piece. You know, I don't know how I'm going to face my wife. I don't know how I'm going to face my husband. I don't know how I'm going to share this with my kids. And, you know, I mean, it really stems and it really expands to a whole host of different issues. Like Leah mentioned, I mean, this impacts a number of different people in the individual's life. And this doesn't need to be something that is, you know, all or nothing. It's not a one size fits all situation. It's not like if you either, you know, you gamble and you don't have a problem, or you gamble and you do have a problem. This kind of works on a continuum. So some people may just do it a little bit too much. They might just, right, you know, maybe they should only, you know, limit it to an hour a week or 2 hours a week or $100 a visit or whatever the case is. But they're not able to, you know. And then you might have the other end where people are, you know, facing, like Leah mentioned, extreme stress and anxiety, potentially, you know, considering or even attempting suicide, losing their homes, losing their relationships. So you know, it really is something that it works on a variety of different levels.
And Dave Yeager, I should say to our listeners that you did get help. You're now working as a counselor. You host this podcast. What was it you think that made you decide that I just can't live like this anymore?
I tell people a story, and it almost sounds like it couldn't be true, but it's a 100% dead truth for me. I sat down in a room just before I decided to seek help, which was about a year and a half ago when I got back into recovery, and I sat in my living room. And I could hear a voice in my head from a movie from years ago. I could hear Morgan Freeman's voice in my head from Shawshank Redemption saying, "Get busy living or get busy dying." Because at that point, I was again contemplating taking my own life because I thought there was no other way out for me. And I chose to live. I made the choice right then and there when that voice came into my head that I was going to choose to live. And if I was going to choose to do that, I was going to choose to do it through an honest recovery. One of the things that has gotten me, that had me, I've been through treatment twice. And what brought me back to treatment was I lost connection with what was working in my recovery, which was my recovery groups, whether that be Gamblers Anonymous, whether it be a problem gambling support group I'm part of. I lost contact with that thinking I had it, that I was okay. And when I made the commitment this time, after that voice hit my, you know, I heard basically that voice in my head telling me either get with it or don't, I made the decision to stay connected to my recovery. And that has been, there's no other way to say it, 100% has been the one thing, the game changer for me in terms of my where I am right now.
Wow, that's really powerful. And I congratulate you for that. Dave, you know, we've been talking a lot about sports betting online gambling. As someone who has been through the throes of a gambling addiction, do you, you know, when you hear these ads on TV or you see these ads on TV and we're sort of surrounded by screens and, you know, way truck stops where you can go gamble, do you feel pulled and tugged in those directions?
I don't right now personally feel pulled and tugged. I hear them. I see them. I know they're there. But I also am in a position where I can talk about those feelings. I can talk about what might come up for me. I can tell you that within my groups and within the circles of my recovery, I can feel the tension and the nervousness about online gambling, about the ads, about the sports betting. You can feel how scared people in recovery are that all of this is so present right now. And I know of people who have fallen to it just over the past year. I'm on an online problem gambling support group that has literally tripled in size over the past year because of this.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's out there.
Josh, let me go back to you. And again, I referenced, you know, truck stops where you can gamble. How much of a problem is that?
Yeah, so that's part of that expansion that I mentioned earlier in the program. In Pennsylvania, there's been a tremendous amount of new types of gambling available, and the truck stop video gaming terminals are one of them. You know, while it's still a little bit early to say, these started to launch, I guess that was back in 2019 when they started to open up across the state. They quickly did expand. Obviously, there was shutdowns and restrictions in place with COVID. But we have seen, I think it's expanded to somewhere in the neighborhood of about 45 locations now. And just for any listener who's not aware, these aren't widely available in southeastern Pennsylvania at this point. But if you go further out to central Pennsylvania and western PA, basically there are truck stops that meet a series of criteria. And if they choose to do so, they can partner and with or basically gain a license and partner with an establishment to have a room that has up to five video gaming machines. And these are kind of similar to something that you would see in a casino, in a brick and mortar casino establishment. So something that has slot machines and other types of gambling games incorporated. So right now, you know, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 200 to 220 of these machines throughout the state at 40 or so different locations. And what we're starting to see are folks who are visiting these types of establishments who might not live close to a brick and mortar casino. We are starting to receive calls from folks who are saying that this is something that, you know, has been a concern to them. Obviously, in Pennsylvania, we have a program called self-exclusion, which allows for folks to voluntarily and confidentially basically ban themselves from being able to gamble in a variety of different ways. And VGTs or video gaming terminals, as they're referred to, that is one of the programs that's available. And we do have folks who are banning themselves in that capacity. So it is something that's here.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, we have to take a very short break. Dave, can you stay with us for the rest of the hour?
Of course.
Okay, that's great. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our guests. We've got a lot of people that want to join our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And this is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking today about online gambling and sports betting, but as casinos are opening up, we're also talking about in-person gambling as well. And again, our guests are Leah Naur. She's professor, director of the Center for Gambling Studies and the Addiction Counselor Training Certificate Program. That's at Rutgers University School of Social Work. Josh Aircole is executive director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling of Pennsylvania. And Dave Yeager is a U.S. Army veteran in recovery for compulsive gambling. And he's host of Fall In. That's a problem gambling podcast for military service members and veterans. And again, you can join us, Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And you can give us a call, that phone number 1-888-477-9499. I do want to talk about education and support services and intervention and therapy and all of that. But let me just read a couple of comments from our listeners. Bill says, I'm very upset at the ads that say you can bet the first $100 for free or some amount of money. It feels like a drug dealer giving away drugs free to get someone hooked. I know people who are having gambling problems. Leah, can you speak to that? And this is, you know, part of the whole sort of online gambling. Come on.
He's exactly right. I mean, these inducements, there's no regulation on any of these inducements. Just like when you were just talking about the truck stops, there's no regulation that governs what the return to player needs to be on a lot of these machines, unlike in other countries. So advertising is not limited. They can basically try to hook you in with anything because none of this is really prescribed. And that's really where we need to move in this country, is to get sort of more responsible with regard to the parameters around you know, machines and return the amount of money returned to players and around ads and what can and can't, how many can run and what they can offer.
Let me read a couple of more related comments, and Josh, I'll give you a chance to respond to this. Harold says, don't the companies bear some responsibility? I'm thinking of the opioid epidemic and the drug companies that pushed it on doctors and people. Isn't this the same? Another listener says, if cigarette ads were taken off TV, why are gambling ads allowed? Aren't they both equally harmful? The ads on the Sixers and Flyers games are totally inappropriate. Josh, you want to take that? It's related to what Leah was saying to our first comment.
Yeah, so in Pennsylvania, Marty, there's a lot of regulations in place and a lot of tools and guidelines that have been established for folks to kind of help to set up a protective status for themselves. And to prevent new problems from starting. And then there's also obviously links to help that are associated. So if you see those ads, there's usually some type of message at the bottom of the screen that focuses on how to get help if you have some type of a problem. And these were all things that were considered prior to the legalization. You know, one of the issues, obviously, like Leah mentioned, is there's really no regulation in place as far as the amount of ads or the consistency. And, you know, with everything that's gone on over the course of the past couple of years, with the expansion, obviously, this was something that wasn't here 2 or 3 years ago. So you have a new market with a lot of competition. And in addition to that, you throw in a pandemic into the mix. So obviously, yeah, there's a lot of drive to really promote the product. And, you know, in most cases, that's obviously going to be aimed at a specific demographic. Obviously, it's going to be highly advertised during things like sporting events because of the available sports gambling and that type of thing. You know, the concern there is obviously, you know, it can be argued from both sides that this is something, again, that most people aren't going to develop a problem with. Most people are able to place a wager or go to a casino and not end up having a significant issue as a result. The problem is that there are folks who are going to develop problems, and it likely will increase as a result of increased availability and participation. So that's one of the obvious concerns there, and trying to minimize the risk that's associated with over consumption of ads and obviously over participation by individuals. That's really the focus.
Let me read the National Problem Gambling Hotline number just for those people that want to reach out. It's 1-800-522-4700. Also, the Pennsylvania Gambling Addiction 24-hour hotline is 1-800-GAMBLER. Dave, let me go back to you and help us understand how treatment worked for you. As you said, you know, you had a relapse and then you went back into treatment. What was different? What was the message? How were they able to help you?
Well, first of all, I'm blessed. Being a veteran, I have access to the VA's gambling treatment program, which was actually the first residential gambling treatment program in the country for anybody, but it's been around since 1972, and I was blessed to be able to go there. It was 5 weeks of pretty intensive psychotherapy, but what made the difference for me was number one, you have a staff there that, while none of them are lived experience gamblers, every one of them had an understanding of what I went through and what my life was about and the people that I was there with. The other part of it is, and what makes it unique is that they ran it as a cohort, meaning that the group that I went in with was the group that I left with at the end 5 weeks later. And every single one of them, you know, we shared experiences. We had a connection. We were able to tell our stories and understand what each one of us was going through. And in my opinion, that plus the curriculum that they used made all the difference in the world for me. It engaged me into the process. That coupled with the fact that, honestly, I was ready. I was at a point where I was ready to step into it. I think that was probably the biggest piece for me.
Let me read a comment, Leah. This is from Jesse, who says, what about the state's role in this? They're capitalizing on people doing these risky bets and losing their money because the games are rigged. Leah, what role do you see state governments playing? Obviously, they see money. They don't have to raise you know, taxes on people's income. They can get money from people's gambling losses. Do they bear some responsibility for all this?
I mean, obviously, you know, from my perspective, yes. I mean, I believe, while I think it's great that they put hotline numbers on ads, most people we know from research don't read them. And while they put, you know, limit setting things for people who think they're developing a problem, it's kind of too late once you're going down the rabbit hole. So this, my view is, before you legalize this, you put these infrastructures in place. And many states, including New Jersey and Pennsylvania, have state-sponsored treatment that you can access. There's also a new telehealth company called KindBridge that's just focused exclusively on telehealth for gamblers and video gamers. But people have to hunt for this, and not all insurance companies are going to pay for gambling treatment.
To you, Josh, and it seems like we're only going to see more of this. I mean, after the U.S. Supreme Court basically legalized sports betting, we're seeing more and more states getting in on the action, so to speak. You look at Europe, you know, there's lots of gambling, sports gambling in Europe as well. Do we just have to learn to figure out how to live with this? And I appreciate the fact that you've been saying, you know, not everyone who gambles, let's say, online is going to become addicted. But do we have to learn to live with just being surrounded by gambling opportunities?
Yeah, I think that's a very realistic question. This isn't something that's going to go away. This is something that, you know, is obviously highly supported. It's highly participated in. And again, you know, most research shows that the majority of folks, whatever the number of folks who do have a problem is, it's usually dwarfed by the number of folks who don't present with a problem. Right. So it's really adjusting to what makes the most sense and putting the most protections in the places where they're needed. And that's where, you know, like Leah mentioned, obviously having tools in place, things like limit setting tools and you know, other types of access to account statements and different things that a lot of the regulations have shown. You know, in some cases, yes, that might be too late for somebody who's struggling. But if somebody doesn't know that that's there in the first place, that's a problem. So, you know, the better that we can educate the public, the better that we can raise awareness about some of the protections that are in place, hopefully that can have an impact at point A. And then, yes, expanding services to offer treatment throughout the state and throughout the country, to have programs that are more inclusive, that are wider spread, you know, things that, you know, might focus on more intense treatment, inpatient residential treatment services, something that is very, very lacking right now across the country. Having different types of programs like this and raising awareness, you know, I think that is really going to be the future of addressing the problems.
Dave, I'm curious about the calls that you get to your podcast. This is from, you know, people in the military or veterans. Are there certain themes, certain things that you hear on a regular basis?
Themes in terms of veterans is probably something that I experienced myself, which is, for those who experienced addiction while they were active duty, was that the military really, number one, the opportunities were there and present all over the place. They're just not, there's no shortage. If you're on most overseas bases, there is some form of gambling available to you. Guys in the field, there's forms of gambling available to them. And a lot of guys talk about filling those dead time spaces with something. And typically gambling was part of it. Mm-hmm. And then the flip side of that is, people who came into a gambling issue while they were active duty, many of them have experienced the same thing that I did, which is the military really didn't know what to do with me. There are protocols in place for people who experience alcohol and drug issues, but just there was nothing in place. There was nothing in place, at least when I was active duty, to deal with, you know, people with a gambling issue. That just, they didn't know what to do with me. So I don't want to say it exacerbated the problem, but I know it certainly didn't. I wonder if my career would have been different had they known more about gambling addiction when I had my gambling addiction.
You mentioned that you released a paper recently looking at the military. Anything you want to add to what Dave Yeager was just saying?
Well, I think it supports exactly what he's saying. This was in a new, you know, representative sample of New Jersey population, and the military veterans had, you know, double the rates of problem gambling, higher rates of suicide. They were particularly higher among the females in the military. And I think it's just really, really important that we start to develop education. For example, these limit setting tools, they should be incorporated when the person first signs up for an account. They shouldn't be optional. People should be taken through each of these tools right when they first open their account, so they're educated as to what's available. I think that's a really small thing that could help. In the military, you know, somebody is getting the revenue from these machines, and I think whoever that is, there should be some kind of a limit setting set up and education for these military members as well.
Dave, let me go back to you and thinking about your family, and also thinking about people gambling online where you can be on your device and be the only person that knows that you're gambling, sitting next to someone on their device, or maybe your child watching television or something. Just the impact that it has on the family, especially when they are in the dark about what's going on that's right next to them.
It's gigantic. The fact of the matter is, when I was in the throes of my addiction, I was able to almost completely, well, no, I was able to completely hide my addiction from my family.
Wow.
When I finally came clean with my family, and I did come clean with them completely, they were completely floored when I told them the things that I had done, because they never knew it.
Wow.
You know, you couple that with the fact that now I can sit there with my phone, and if I wanted to gamble right next to my wife while we were watching TV, I could, and I know people who have done it. It's very, very easy to hide this addiction.
We're just about out of time, and let me turn to you, Josh, in terms of the future and looking to what can be done to, you know, manage this, especially for people for whom gambling is going to be a problem. And I get from all of you that we need these structures in place. They're not there yet. And yet it seems like we're on a train that's running down the tracks.
Yeah, really what it comes down to is there needs to be an increase in the awareness of the problem, of how the problem can develop, of what it looks like. Obviously, putting protections in place for those who are not yet at risk or not yet showing signs of developing a problem, and certainly having programs and services in place for those who do exhibit some type of a problem. And I mean, really, this stems from, you know, it goes from family all the way out to folks who are working in the field. If you are a counselor, if you're a clinician working in substance use, if you're working in the mental health field, be aware of resources, be aware of referral options, so that even if you're not going to be the one to offer services, at least know where to turn. And that's what, you know, that's what we spend a lot of our time doing is working up and down and across the state, trying to connect folks with additional information and resources so that they can provide help.
And I guess, Dave, I'll give you the last word, 30 seconds before we have to close things down here.
Yeah, I just want to say if there's people out there who think they're alone, who don't know what to do, who are unsure of where to go because they may be struggling with a gambling issue, please reach out. There are more of us out here than you know. That's the only message I want to get out.
Well, I appreciate all three of you joining us today on Radio Times. Dave Yeager, thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. He's U.S. Army veteran in recovery for compulsive gambling, host of Fall In, that's a problem gambling podcast for military service members and veterans. Josh Aircole, thank you for joining us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Marty.
You're very welcome. And he is executive director of the Council on Compulsive Gambling of Pennsylvania. And Leah Naur, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's professor, director of the Center for Gambling Studies and the Addiction Counselor Training Certificate Program at Rutgers University School of Social Work. Again, the National Problem Gambling Helpline, 1-800-522-4700. For New Jersey and Pennsylvania, Gambling Addiction 24-Hour Hotline, 1-800-GAMBLER. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times to find out more about the program. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Aronson, Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscow. Thank you for joining us.